for decades. He's been the king of Memphis.
It's good to be king of your own little town.
You want to see the king? You think anybody would pay to come down and see a sawed-off runt? Bug-eyed Bill Dundee? No, they come to see me, baby.
King of them all, right here it is, baby. The greatest wrestler that ever lived and ever will step into a ring. You're looking at him, and I am the champion.
And you may be familiar with his work in WWE, too.
I'll show you who the real king of the World Wrestling Federation is.
It's the most electrifying move. It's Sports Entertainment Today. Oh, the people down below.
For 50 years, he's been known all over the world as one of wrestling's biggest stars. And now, he's decided to share all of his favorite stories from his 50 years in wrestling with you.
Tell me a story.
Why don't you put your false teeth in backward and eat yourself to death?
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
This is the Jerry Lawler Show. Welcome to the Jerry Lawler Show. If you caught the show on Friday, you know that it contained part one of a two-part conversation that the King had with his old friend, legendary former NWA heavyweight champion, Tommy Wildfire Rich. So now we'll pick things up with part two as Sean and the King continue their conversation with the great Tommy Rich.
Who were some of your other favorite opponents in your career besides the King?
Oh, shoot. Everybody wrestled different. I mean, shoot, I got to wrestle, you know, all of Baron Von Raschke. I mean, you know, I just got to wrestle all the characters, man. I mean, and it was all a different experience. And I draw money with, I mean, Superstar. I wrestled with Ken Patera. I mean, you know, I had angles with everybody that come through Georgia, just about King Kong, Mosca. You know, I got to work with the best and just was very fortunate to get to do that. And listened and done good with it.
How long were you the NWA champion?
Well, now that I don't like to talk about too much. A week.
Okay.
But that, you know, I don't know. I was pretty young when I got the belt. And that's, you know, that's a lot. Of course, and you was a champion. You traveled around working with different, going to town to town and all of that. And I was young and I don't know. That was, you know, for a young kid, that was a lot. I mean, that's a lot of responsibility.
Without a doubt.
Make the shows go, I mean, from this territory to that territory, go out there and wrestle 45 minutes to an hour, whatever you had to do. I don't know if I was ready for that or not. So, but it was, you know, like I said, my name's up there with the rest of them. So, you know.
Yeah, that's absolutely awesome, man. That's great.
Going back to that feud with you and Idol against Jerry, I got to say some of my favorite Memphis matches are when Bam Bam got involved as his tag team partner. Just total chaos, brawling all over the building. How was it with Bam Bam? Was he stiff to work with back in those days, or how was that?
You know, Bam Bam came in there. I mean, he was green as a gourd too. He had just signed up with Larry Sharp up at that Monster Factory, and I mean, he didn't even get to train very much. And all of a sudden, we called Larry, and Larry said, "I'm going to send you down to Memphis." And man, here he came, and I thought he was awesome from the get go. I mean, he was just really
That's right. He did come from Sharp's gym, didn't he? I forgot about that.
Yeah, and remember later on he sued Larry Sharp because Larry had in the contract, I guess, with all of those guys that came from the Monster Factory that he would get, that Larry would forever get a percentage of every payoff they ever made.
Yeah, I don't imagine Bam Bam like that.
No, he finally had to sue Sharp. But anyway, yeah, no, Bam Bam was really good and easy to work with. At least I thought so. And then, you know, he came working with me. And then, of course, I brought him in as my partner against you and Austin Idol.
And that was real good. That was, I mean, shoot. And Bam Bam went on. I mean, I didn't realize that's where it started because he could work some when he came. Yeah, he was, I mean, And shit, he did good in Tennessee too. Tennessee, he did real good.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, real good. I loved working with Bam Bam.
King, any memories of the time on TV where Tommy was, I think, having a squash match and a woman came out of the crowd and got physically involved?
Do you remember that beautiful woman, Tommy?
I remember that big bosom she had.
Oh.
Yeah, that's another good one. I ain't thought about that one either. That's another good one. That's right.
That was, gosh, I guess that's twice I dressed up like a female and asked him for autographs. I did it once with, Jerry Jarrett and Jackie Fargo, I think, or something like that. And then later on with you, Tommy.
Yeah, shoot, that was a good one too.
What about Lance? You know, every time I look back at some of the different things that we did there at Memphis TV, was there anybody better than Lance Russell ever?
Oh no, because Lance, I mean, Lance and Sally, he was, shoot, to me, Lance and Gordon Sullivan, about two, you know, of course, two different styles. I mean, I like Gordon just because he talks so sophisticated. But then Lance, old country, and he'd just get up in it. Yeah, Lance was the best.
Yeah, he was. He was something.
I was just watching when Jimmy Valiant was insulting your mom, and you came out and beat him up. And of course, Lance was right in the middle of it. He always seemed to find himself in the middle of the chaos, but never got banged up too badly.
Bless his heart. Yeah, he didn't mind, but he didn't want to get touched. Of course, I don't blame him.
And of course, Dave Brown. Now we couldn't do anything with Dave because we had to recognize his credibility as the weatherman, because he was always the top weatherman on the station, meteorologist or whatever. So it was like an unwritten rule. You didn't get Dave that involved. You know, Dave was there as a, you know, he was just there almost like, I'm Lance's buddy, but I'm not going to really get too much into this wrestling because my main job is predicting the weather.
Yeah, he was his right hand man. Yeah, he just stayed out of the way.
Do you ever sit back and think about? I mean, I get people to ask me all the time, you know, what was your favorite match, or who was your favorite opponent, or do you like I usually don't have a good answer for that because, like you said, we've both been around so long and wrestled every one of the greats. If somebody asked you what was your favorite match, could you think of one?
Shit, I mean, that besides hiding under the ring, I mean, that was probably one of the biggest ones that people remember more than anything would have been that one right there.
Yeah, but it had to be huge when you wrestled Harley Race and won the NWA title. That had to be big. How long did that?
I mean, it's like you said. I mean, yeah, of course that was. I mean, and that would have to be the top one, I would say, because he won the world heavyweight title. And Harley Race, I mean, he was just to me the best world champion there was. Because I mean, he, like some guys have one style and they just wrestled everybody the same. Where Harley, he would adapt to your whatever style you wrestled or what style I wrestled. He would just adapt to everybody's style. I just always was impressed with the way Harley handled himself and everything. So Harley would be, I mean, yeah, of course, my world heavyweight title, and which I just love Harley to death anyway. So,
well, you know,
he was always Harley. Harley helped me so much. Like there in Georgia, every time he'd come in, you know, he'd always sit, and me and him would talk, and he helped, I mean, told me a lot of things, just different little things and stuff that I won't never forget, you know. And, of course, in wrestling with Wahoo McDaniel, I love, a lot of people say the Indian was a butt wipe, but I always got along with him most of the time. I mean, he was a different kind of sometimes, but, you know, I mean, shoot. And it's like you, Jerry, I've seen you wrestle Nick Bockwinkel a bunch. And I wrestled him a couple of times. I mean, he was, you know, very, I mean, a general in that ring too. I mean, so, you know, it's hard. Like you said, there's not no good answer because we got to wrestle the best when wrestling was wrestling. And it's, you know, so shoot, I mean.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, one of the things about being a champion, and you learned this, of being the world champion, was every territory you went into, you're wrestling their top guy, and your job really was to make all the fans think that their top guy should really be the world champion. And I think, like you said, Harley Race was as good at that as any champion ever. I mean, every match that I ever saw Harley in, it looked like he made it look like the other guy, should have won.
Oh yeah, most definitely Harley, yeah.
How about the WWE Network actually last year put up this rare footage from the Omni of a show with you and Ric Flair in the main event? How do you compare Ric with guys like Harley and Bockwinkel?
Ric, I mean, Ric was a heck of a champion. Yeah. I mean, he'd go all night long with you. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like I said, like Harley could adapt to everybody's style, and I think Ric sometimes, you know, just was in his own style, you know. I mean, so, but I always enjoyed wrestling with him. I mean, they tell him to go 30, and he always take me 45 to close to an hour, you know, because he thought I was a wild buck, so he'd always want to blow me up.
that was one thing.
I have a lot of respect for Ric, you know. I mean, I think he was a great champion. I'm not taking nothing away from him. But there again, like I said, just to me, Harley Race was of all I knew, which I, you know, the Funks was a little bit before my time. But I know Terry was a great wrestler. So, I mean, it just being mentioned in the name of all these guys, man, it's just awesome.
Yeah, that's quite an accomplishment. You're in a select club there. You talked about Ric Flair. The thing about Ric, like you said, his matches always seem to go excuse me, longer than usual. Ric just loved, absolutely loved, and still does. Ric loved being a performer. He loved being in that.
Yeah.
And he didn't matter who he was in there against. He was in there to put on a show, and he did a great job. And that's been the love of Ric's life, being inside the ring, being the champion, and he was as good at it as anybody.
He just did an interview saying he wants to take on R-Truth for the 24/7 title. He thinks he can get a win there.
He probably could. You're right.
Yeah, sure, too. He sure would. But, I mean, it's just, it's hard to believe that we've been doing it as long as we have, man. I mean, we're very, very blessed.
I was telling Sean the other day, it's like, I go back, people ask, you know, who was the different wrestlers, and just like you, Tommy, you got to wrestle almost all of them. I had a match one time, me and Jim White, the early days of the Mid-South Coliseum. We were against Lou Thesz and Pat O'Connor.
Oh my.
And the special referee was Jersey Joe Walcott, who was a world heavyweight champion boxer back in the, 40s or something like that. It was crazy. I got to wrestle Lou Thesz. I got to wrestle Jack Briscoe. I got to wrestle Terry Funk, Dory Funk, Harley Race, Ric Flair, Nick Bockwinkel, every freaking champion you can imagine. It's been crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's something, and they're all unique in their own different ways. I mean, it's hard to just say, you know, all I had to do was hold on and fall. You know, it was getting just the minds and the psychology and stuff. It's unreal, you know.
Was there ever a guy that you all of a sudden you realized you were booked against and you went, oh no, not him again?
Well, I wrestled Dino Bravo one time in a babyface match, and it wasn't very good. He was kind of stiff anyway. You talking about somebody stiff? Dino was a little stiffer. He was with me anyway. But yeah, I was glad I never booked that one again.
I remember one time I booked me and Austin Idol against Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen. Oh my God!
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, and after the match, Austin Idol came to me and said, "King, if you ever book that match again, I'll quit the business." He said, I don't mean I'll just quit Memphis. I'll quit the business.
Oh man, yeah, I can hear him saying that too. I work at Stan too. That was another one. He, whether he meant to be stiff or not, he was.
You're not kidding. You're not kidding. I was always, you know, I'd always heard all the stories about Bruiser Brody, but I swear when he worked with me in Memphis, he was like a piece of cake. He sold well. I had several great matches with Bruiser Brody there in Memphis.
Yeah, Bruiser, like I spent some time with him in Atlanta too when, Jerry Blackwell was promoting the Southern Championship Wrestling. He'd come down and he would wrestle for Jerry, and Jerry would tell him to get him a hotel. He'd come stay out in the country with me at our house. And my kids back then, my daughters had two twin water beds, and I'll never forget. He said, "I'll sleep in there on the couch." Jerry to get him a hotel, but he didn't want Jerry to have to spend the money. I mean, a lot of people say what they want about Bruiser, but like you said, I've seen him beat some boys up, but if he liked you, and like you said, you had a good match with him, but he'd talk about his kids, building a tree house, and people never seen that side of him. And I was just amazed to hear him talk. But yeah, Bruiser Brody, he's another good one that was gone too early.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
I got to throw in, you know, as somebody who just grew up loving ECW, I think King had probably the craziest heel heat in the history of that promotion when he showed up. But Tommy, so many times I can remember in like Philly or New York, just you would just walk out and people would be just like reaching over the guardrail, just flipping you off, getting in your face, screaming at you, and you would just stand there laughing, just soaking it all in. Can you tell me a little bit about you and those ECW crowds and the fun you had?
Oh Lord, that was like getting paid to do nothing. I mean, because I just got all I had to do was manage. I mean, and yeah, for me to be a full-blooded Italian, it pissed a lot of people off. yeah. So mine was really And of course, we had a little Guido and Tracy Smother saying he was full-blooded Italian. So yeah, two cornbread boys saying they. You know, full-blooded, yeah. Them northern folk didn't like that too much. So that was, I had a blast with that. Like I said, I just had to go stand in the corner. We did some six-mans, I mean, and it was a shooting. They beat us every night, but we still draw money, you know. So it was good, you know. And then at one time, Paul Lee, because we do the Tennessee high spots, you know, they go out there, and if they didn't bust the chair, it didn't bend over your head. Then they didn't do their job right, and we started doing, because we was on early, so we'd do some of the Tennessee spots, you know, and that stuff started getting over. So Paul Lee said, "Well, we're going to have to cut," and then some of the other guys started doing them. So they told them, they said, no more Tennessee high spots, you know, because they wanted it all just blood and guts. So, yeah, we had to quit doing that. But, yeah, I had a blast up there.
The full-blooded Italian with a Tennessee accent, huh?
Yeah. God. Yeah, cornbread Tennessee.
Well, listen, Tommy, we've kept you on here long enough, buddy. We could talk for days about the career that you've had. It's been absolutely amazing. It's still going. So we're going to see you.
Yes, sir.
Going to see you September 26th. You got any other dates? Anything with this Corona? Everything's just been shut down. You got anything else in the offing?
Well, after the 1st of October, I'm going up to New Jersey for 3 days. And, but other than that, that's really, shoot, every time you book something, it ends up getting canceled. So anyway, that's September the 26th.
Yeah.
Burt Prentice has put a big one together. I didn't even know it was at the ballpark. So it's going to be a big night, man.
It'll be huge.
I'm excited. And good, happy 50 years to you, Jerry. It's been a ride. And just, y'all, hey, thank y'all, Sean, for having me on the show, man. Anytime is an honor.
All right, Tommy. Thank you so much, buddy.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This is the Jerry Lawler Show.
Yeah, let's hype this one more time. We got the show coming up in Jonesboro. 50 years. Went by fast, right?
It's in Jackson, Tennessee.
Jackson, I'm sorry. So is your opponent not set yet?
You know what? We haven't. He just finally, Bert just finally got the date, the 26th, finalized just this past week. He's been speaking with the mayor back and forth. He, of course, wanted to do it originally at the Oban Arena, but now we're thinking that, you know, that the mayor actually suggested doing it at the ballpark, which is a big, beautiful ballpark where the Jackson Generals play. Like I said, seats about 8,000 people. And, it should be great being outdoors, and that people will feel a lot safer coming to a show like that at this time of year. So he's really just getting the thing started. I didn't even know until talking with Tommy that he had already booked that match at the Rock and Roll Express against Tommy and Doug Gilbert. But, we're still trying to figure out who my opponent should be after 50 years. Who should the 50th anniversary opponent be for that night?
Ooh, that is a big honor.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's a big honor, but it needs to be, you know, it needs to be somebody that's appropriate, somebody that had some history there in the Tennessee territory.
Yeah.
And me.
Well, we will definitely be talking about that as we get closer. Should be a tremendous event. And I know you and I are excited that baseball's back tonight.
Oh my goodness, you're not kidding. I've been watching the Cleveland Indians, I guess you'd call them exhibition games. They had a couple of them against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And, so I've been watching that. Cleveland won both of those games against the Pirates. So, this Saturday night, excuse me, actually Friday night starts the major league season, but my Indians play Saturday night.
So happy to have sports back. Just give me something, even with empty stadiums and a reduced schedule.
Have you watched a baseball game yet with the empty stadium?
I have watched a few of the Korean games, yeah.
Oh, so you haven't watched any of the major league exhibition games?
No, I have not.
Yeah, I watched one at like I said, two Cleveland games, one at the Cleveland Progressive Field and one in Pittsburgh. And you know, other than the noise, I mean, you know, they're able to film the game where you don't even realize, you know, that the fans aren't really necessarily there until you get a shot of the, you know, a ball going like out for a home run or something like that. And then all of a sudden it just lands in empty chairs out there. And other than the noise, but it's still fun to watch. It's the guys are out there giving it their all. So I'm excited about it. Just any kind of sports. Come on.
And for some reason, football's going to have fans in attendance, right?
Yeah. I saw that. It's funny. You know, I have a buddy that's a Major League Baseball umpire, Andy Fletcher, and he was just telling me that, he was just telling me yesterday, as a matter of fact, that he had the first six games in Cleveland. So I was so excited. I said, man, I'll just shoot up there and go to one of those games. And he texted me back, said, nope, no fans, for the Major League Baseball games as of yet. It may change down the road and, you know, they're going to have 60 games and then the playoffs, but, yeah, the NFL has announced that they're going to have between 10 and 20,000 fans. Everybody will have to wear a face covering or mask or whatever, but yeah, they're going to allow fans at the games.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's up with all the, discrepancies because the NBA isn't even letting them play in their home stadiums. Everybody's just at Disney in a bubble. And then we have baseball's allowing stadiums, but no fans, and football's doing stadiums and some fans, everybody wearing a mask.
Yeah. Right now, I don't care. Just get some sports back for us, right?
All right. Do we want to talk about the project you were working on?
Well, we can say a little bit about the film crew. Film crew was in town last week there in Memphis, and then I went down to Ardmore, Tennessee. Lauren and I went down to check out our buddy David Milliken. You know, David is the belt master of the world, and this is my first time to ever go to David's house, and he lives in Ardmore, which is just right outside of Huntsville, Alabama, actually. And oh my gosh, his house is like a museum. What a collection of wrestling memorabilia David has amassed over the years, and most of it's mine. I was in shock.
What's the coolest thing you had?
Oh gosh, he's got so much of my stuff. He's got more wrestling memorabilia than I have of mine. Well, of course, I mean, you know, he has every belt imaginable down there. Even the old Southern championship belt that we used back when it goes back to. I remember looking at the side plates on that and said, you know, Irish Mike Clancy defeated Danny Hodge or something like that back in this belt goes back to the 50s, I'm sure. He had that belt and then I mean, I can't tell you how many crowns and robes and my boots, my white patent leather zip up boots with the black crown on the side. He had the boots. And this is what we were down there looking for. The boots that I wore in one of the matches with Andy Kaufman, and this show that they're putting together is about, I don't want to divulge too much information, but it's going to be a really neat concept where, they're traveling around the country looking for forgotten or lost WWE memorabilia.
Yeah, I actually meant your other project, the WWE one.
Oh, which one's that?
Are we allowed to talk about the video game?
Oh gosh, yeah. Man, you almost got me to let some news slip out here that I'm not supposed to talk about yet. But yeah, no, the other one is okay. Yeah, they were kind of keeping the wraps on that for a while, but now they've announced that the 2K Battleground, WWE 2K Battleground game is coming out. And, it's going to be released in September, and Mauro Ranallo and the King are doing the commentary on it. So I'm really excited about that. And it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be like, any video game that the people have seen before, especially not a wrestling video game. I mean, you know, it's got some crazy over the top stuff. I mean, there's going to be helicopters and flying in while the matches are going on. If you can throw your opponent over the rope outside and you may get eaten by an alligator.
I saw that.
Yeah, there's just, it is really, really, wild, fun, crazy video game. I mean, the characters just, they look awesome. And I think not only do I do by, the commentary with Mauro, and you can imagine how Mauro and I worked together a little bit on SmackDown, and I really love working with Mauro. He's a really star when it comes to doing voiceover. But, and I think I'm also a playable character in there. So that's, I do remember doing some voiceover, some commentary talking about, mentioning that the King is in the match. So, I haven't actually seen that part of it yet, but it's going to be a cool game.
How do you do commentary for a game like that? Is it like, oh my God, Jerry Lawler just got eaten by an alligator?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was sort of like that. We got to watch, Mauro and I would go into the studio and we're on mic side by side there. And, we just watch clips of the video game. And the cool thing about it was the way they, you know, at this time, while they were just building the game and putting the game together, we would see generic wrestlers. We didn't necessarily know who the wrestlers, I mean, when you're looking at it, it was just a generic, like a mannequin or a body or whatever doing the action. It didn't have the actual face or the physique and everything of who the wrestler was, but you could see the other action, like, oh my gosh, I know there's this huge hammer, you know, like Harley Quinn or something has this huge hammer. This hammer is even bigger than that comes into play in the game. And I mean, just like I said, the alligator, there's a big goat with these gigantic horns, all sorts of things. It's almost like the, you know, how everybody raved about what was the match that the Undertaker had, the Boneyard match, and then the Swamp match and everything. It's almost like watching, it's almost like playing a video game in those kind of conditions with even more things added. So Morrow and I would watch clips and we would describe the action, and then we would go over and redo the same clip using an individual's name. You know, and so like, you know, you do one with, you do one with, say, one, Drew McIntyre or John Cena or The Rock or The King and that sort of thing. And you do the same sentence over and over. It was long and tedious work, but it was a lot of fun working with Morrow.
How many hours does that take?
Oh my gosh. This is the truth. We probably put in about 40 hours total. Wow. We certainly didn't do it all in one session. You know, we did several. We did some in Nashville, some down in, at the Performance Center in Florida. And so we put a lot of time in on the thing.
Yeah. I'm looking at the 2K website. Looks like it comes out on September 18th. So you got a busy September.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Good stuff. Anything else?
Oh. Just tell everybody to stay safe, and we'll be back next week. As a matter of fact, you know what? It was a good idea. Why don't we try to get next week? Why don't we try to get Morrow? I'll call Morrow and see if I can get him to come on, and we'll talk a little more about the video game and working together on that.
That would be fantastic. Everybody loves Morrow.
Yep, they do.
If he wants to start talking about some 80s Japanese wrestling, I'll hop in and do some translation.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. Thank you to Tommy Rich. Amazing. You guys go back 45 years and you're still going, coming up in September for that 50th anniversary that we will be talking about. Thank you everybody for listening. We'll be back next week, hopefully with Morrow, and, we'll be talking to you then.